ओम गणतम नंदस्य जन जन सुलकया चक्षुस्मृतं येन तस्मै श्री गुरवे नमः श्री चैतन्य मनोभीष्टं स्तुतितं येन भूतले सायं रूपकदामायं ददति सापनन्तिकाम् मञ्जकौपृथिव्यश्च कृपसिन्धुभ्यः च पतितनं पवनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः. After Brahma has completed some of his prayers, we could say three quarters of his prayers, as we've read up to text 30, and there were 40 prayers, his offerings to Krishna, which were ultimately asking Krishna to forgive him. Why was he asking Krishna's forgiveness? Because why? Yeah. He disturbed his pastimes. There was arrogance displayed in front of Krishna. When one displays one's own abilities, intelligence, strength in front of one of superior ability and strength and intelligence, one minimizes oneself. One doesn't magnify one's abilities. One minimizes. One appears quite foolish. That's like a candle in a darkened room may appear very bright and give off so much light. But when that candle is brought in front of the sun, it turns out to be very insignificant, negligible, unnoticeable. So when anyone tries to imagine that they have some power to display in front of Krishna, the only thing that is displayed is their own limitations. Because Krishna is like the sun. Krishna Surya Sam Maya Haya Andhakar. But Krishna is like the sun. Unlimited, unbounded power, but yet in the most beautiful of all attractive forms, Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Brahma was asking for Krishna to forgive him for his offense. He had actually gotten in the way of Krishna's pastimes, or rather, what he did in taking away the boys and the cows was incorporated into a pastime of Krishna. So now Brahma, in a very intellectual way, he has explained the potency of Krishna, and now he's glorifying bhakti. And in the last prayer, we read, "My dear Lord," Brahma said, "I therefore pray to be so fortunate that in this life as Lord Brahma, or in another life, wherever I take my birth, I may be counted as one of your devotees. I pray that wherever I may be, even amongst the animal species, I can engage in devotional service to your lotus feet." And text 31. Brahma is praying for the ability from Krishna. He's asking for a benediction, a prayer. Just let me somehow or another be a devotee. And remember how highly placed Brahma was, how vastly intelligent he was. And yet all he desires is to be a devotee. He doesn't feel himself qualified to be an exalted devotee, but just let me somehow or another be a devotee so I can engage in devotionals. Even if I'm in an animal body, but let me somehow engage in your devotional service. So this, truly, by this he's saying how wonderful, how rare and how powerful is devotional service, even compared to liberation. How rare it is, and we can also say how much we take it for granted, how much we don't understand the rarity, the fortune of being able to serve Krishna. Indeed, if one serves Krishna even a little bit, that guarantees that in time he will be in the spiritual world with Krishna. It is just a matter of time, because nothing is lost in devotional service. Everything is an eternal gain. In the material world, what we gain, whatever it is, it will be taken away, stolen by time. Kalosmin loka chaya krit, Krishna says. He destroys everything in this world is time. How unfortunate it is to have invested all our energy, all our life, our hopes into something that we find out is doomed. And yet, on the other hand, whatever we do in Krishna's service is truly ours. So what stops us from taking it extremely seriously and seeing the fortune of performing devotional service? I mean, I'm thinking of something, but I'm not. But there's other things, certainly. What stops us? Huh? Desires. But that maybe pushes us away from Krishna. But what stops us from understanding the fortune of being a devotee? Desire is very, desire is really true. Desires, they cover the intelligence. We think something else that is temporary as valuable comes and goes. Dukkha yona evite adyantavanti kante anate ramate buddha. Yes, desires, that's actually a good answer. But what else? Familiarity. Huh? Familiarity? Yeah, that's what I was thinking. That the material world seems a lot more real to us than the spiritual world. But what we consider real in the material world, when it is time for us to leave our bodies, and indeed this shall happen to everyone, if we try to hold on to that thing that seems real, it will be just like trying to hold on to smoke. There is no substance to it. It turns out to be a false shelter, completely a false shelter. Illusion. Smoke. Lack of faith. So we want to develop our faith on one side, our depth of realization, and to remove our material desires because they cloud our consciousness. We lack faith and we have doubts. But in this Vedic system, one of the ways of getting knowledge, instead of waiting to the moment of our death and say, oh yes, it's true. What do you know? It's true that the material world holds no shelter for me. Instead of doing that way of getting knowledge, there's another way. Hearing from someone who is extremely intelligent and extremely experienced, like Lord Brahma. So what is he? This is his position. That is his right, his adhikara, to speak prayers, is that he is extremely qualified. He's an authority in so many fields. His intelligence is practically unlimited. In the matter of creation, he's empowered by Krishna to do these things. And if we hear his conclusions, We hope they will affect our conclusions. At least we should hear them carefully. So what does he think? What does Brahma think is valuable? How does he define fortune? Because in this world, we see someone who has something that we don't have, and we think that person is fortunate, whether it's a fancy car or a fancy this or a fancy that. We think that person is fortunate, and here I am, a victim of circumstances. Poor me. He is fortunate. I am unfortunate. But what does Brahma consider to be actually one who is fortunate? Here's what he says in the 31st verse. Who does he define as fortunate? He's speaking to Krishna and says, O Almighty Lord, how greatly fortunate are the cows and ladies of Vrindavan, the nectar of whose breast milk you have happily drunk to your full satisfaction, taking the form of their calves and children. All the Vedic sacrifices performed from time immemorial up to the present day have not given you as much satisfaction. So why is Brahma saying that the cows and the mothers, the elderly gopis of Vrindavan, why are they fortunate? Because in the past time, Krishna has, when Brahma stole away the cows and the boys, Krishna took the form of the cows and boys, and for 1 year, Krishna went home, was fed by his mothers, by the boys' mothers, and the mothers and the cows, because Krishna took those forms of the missing calves and the missing boys. Those mothers and those cows had the opportunity to feed Krishna and to express all their love to Krishna. So who is fortunate? Says Brahma. They are fortunate. And why are they fortunate? One could say, because they were able to feed Krishna milk, their breast milk. But what does that mean? It means they were able to love Krishna and serve him and satisfy him to such a degree that Krishna was eager to drink that milk. He has no thirst for anything. By definition, he is fully self-satisfied. He is the Atmarama of Atmaramas. Everyone else who is self-satisfied becomes satisfied still more by hearing about Krishna. He is the full satisfaction, and yet he was eager to drink this milk. Why? Because they were so eager to feed Krishna because of their love for him, and that eagerness made Krishna exceedingly eager to drink. Their fortune was that they loved Krishna. And therefore, based on that love, they did service for Krishna. And Krishna drank that service. He drank it up eagerly. He wanted it. He needed it. Even though he doesn't need anything. He was so hungry. Patram pushpam palam toyam yomam bhaktya panasiti. Because of bhakti. Taraham bhakti paritam asnami. I take it because of the bhakti. They are fortunate because they were able to satisfy Krishna with their bhakti, with their devotion. And therefore their devotion naturally turned into service, and Krishna was so eager. They are fortunate. Why are they fortunate? Because they got the opportunity to please Krishna. And that is everything for someone who loves Krishna. But without even their wanting it, they achieved the highest ecstasy because Krishna was pleased by their offerings, and that naturally pleases the soul. Yayapma supraseedati. The person, we are pleased when Krishna is pleased. Now we are trying to please ourselves independently of pleasing Krishna, and the result is frustration. bluffing, yes, I am achieving so much happiness and everyone should be envious of me. But actually it is just a bluff. We achieve frustration because despite all our efforts, the soul, ourselves, simply remains unsatisfied. Here's a comment to text. Text 31 by Srila Sridhara Swami. The idea is that a birth endowed with devotional service to you, Krishna, in any form of life at all, is better than birth amongst the demigods and so on. So what is fortunate again? A life endowed with devotional service is fortunate. Better than the highest life in this world without devotional service, because that will be crushed with time. And it is full of anxiety because it is ultimately full of envy. So Brahma celebrates in eagerness with the 7 verses, Sridhar Swami says, beginning with Aho To Danya. That's this 31st verse. I think later Sanatana Goswami will say it's 10 verses. Vraja Gauramanya means the cows and the gopis who live in Vrindavan. Their milk was drunk by you in the form of their calves and their sons. For whose? Your satisfaction. Even all of the sacrifices up to today, all the Vedic sacrifices are meant for your satisfaction. Yajna Vai Vishnu. But they have not satisfied you. All the opulent offerings, the gold, the ghee, the this and the that, offered in sacrifice, they have, from the beginning of time until now, they have not been capable of satisfying you. In the same way that the nectarian breast milk of those gopis and cows has been drunk at every moment by you with satisfaction. That's Sridhar Swami. Sanatana Goswami says, in that context, with the thought in mind, I am praying for such devotion as rendered by the persons dwelling in the cow pastures of Srinanda. That is what he wants, such devotion. For the service of their lotus feet, I want that. They have so much devotion and therefore I wish to serve them. We are so proud. We think, I don't want to serve anyone. And in our arrogance, we think and hope that people will realize how great we are and serve us. This is called Maya. But Brahma, being so intelligent and so experienced, he's praying for the service of the lotus feet of those who are serving Krishna in such a way that is satisfying him. And also, he said these verses in pursuit of the logic that sweetness rounds everything up nicely. So everything's like a meal. Every prayer should end with something very sweet. So here is some sweetness, not just the philosophy that he was speaking, but glorifying the residents of Vrindavan. And also taking into consideration that the description of the glories of the dear devotees of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the greatest way of offering him praise. Those devotees are congratulated in the 10 verses. So he says 10 verses, beginning Aho Iti. Sridhara Swami said 7 verses. He says 10. The word Aho expresses surprise, and the word Iti expresses auspiciousness. Most fortunate means having attained the topmost stage of success. The gopis are called Ramanis because they give you pleasure, gratifying you by giving the gift of their breast milk. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments on this verse as well. Brahma prayed, though totally unqualified, he's most qualified, but thinking, though totally unqualified, I've prayed to become your devotee. If you wish, you may fulfill my prayer. Certainly, it is not proper for me to pray to attain the elevated stage of your devotees engaged in the spontaneous attraction of Vatsalya Bhav and other moods. I can only praise them. This is expressed in two verses. Brahma prayed, the cows and gopis of Braja are supremely fortunate. The word aho expresses extreme surprise. You, with your transcendental body full of eternal bliss and knowledge, have taken the form of the cowherd boys and the calves to drink the nectarian milk from their mother's breasts with extreme bliss. With each mouthful, you experienced ever-increasing bliss, ativa muda. In your form as calves, you could not even tolerate the time it took to milk the cows. Without taking the form of, so that's the way, the calves, they're held back while the mother cow is being milked. So Krishna would not tolerate waiting a few minutes. He was so eager to drink the milk from the mother cows, and he in the form of a calf would break free to drink that. So he was eager, so eager to taste their loving vatsalya rasa, their motherly affection. Without taking the form of the cowherd boys, it would not have been possible to drink the milk of so many different mothers. O powerful one, O Vibhu, you took many forms out of extreme greed to drink. You could not even miss the nectar from one breast. Since they gave you such bliss, there is no doubt that the bodies of the cows and mothers were transcendental, because Krishna cannot get bliss from anything of the material world. Full of eternal knowledge and bliss, all the Vedic sacrifices performed by myself, Brahma speaking, Shiva, and others from time immemorial up to the present day with perfect actions and mantra chanting have not given you as much satisfaction. Such praise of the residents of Vrindavan. Aho bhagyam, aho bhagyam. Oh, greatly fortunate. Nanda gopa majo kasham. Yan mitram paramanandanam. Purnam Brahma Sanatanam. How greatly fortunate are Nanda Maharaj, the cowherd men, and all the other inhabitants of Brajabhumi. There is no limit to their good fortune. Krishna is unlimitedly fortunate, and those who live with him in Vrindavan also have unlimited fortune. Now, we get sad because no matter how fortunate we have, it's not enough. No matter how much fortune we have, it's not enough to satisfy us. Therefore, we think ourselves lacking in fortune. But they have unlimited fortune because they are in touch fully with the unlimitedly fortunate Krishna. There's no limit to their good fortune because the Absolute Truth, the source of transcendental bliss, the Eternal Supreme Brahman, has become their friend. That's a translation of Prabhupada's Chaitanya Charitamrita. This verse is included in there. So Brahma's desire is the fortune because he's so powerful, but he's thinking himself lacking fortune in relative to the fortune of the residents of Vrindavan. Sanatana Goswami says, not only are those who have given their breast milk to you fortunate, but all the residents of Braja, headed by Sri Nanda, are extremely fortunate. As stated by the verse beginning, Aho, where the word Aho is repeated out of extreme joy, Aho, Aho Bhagyam, Aho Bhagyam. Or with the idea of their extreme good fortune, either Brahma's great joy in glorifying them, or to give emphasis to the great fortune of the residents of Vrindavan. Brahma says that twice, Aho Bhagyam, Aho Bhagyam. Those whose residence is the cow pastures of Nanda Gopa, or Nanda, the cowherd men, and the other residents of Braja, the animals, the birds, and so on, of all of them, what to speak of Nanda's fortune? Ah, even the cowherd men are extremely fortunate. Such is to be deduced here by the logic of what to speak of. And Sanatana Goswami also says, the glories of the most dear devotees of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, led by Sri Radha, are not overtly, outwardly described, because in their childhood, their special rasa with him had not yet begun at this time. Or another reason is because of the supreme confidentiality of this Brahma, feeling embarrassed because he is the Lord's son, and so on. So he doesn't glorify the dealings of the younger gopis with Krishna for those reasons. Jiva Goswami says, even your own greatness cannot be as great as this, the fortune of the devotees of Vrindavan. Quite astounding, this comment. Thus remembering that there is yet another super excellence of them, he speaks again with extreme amazement in the verse beginning, Aho. Aho indicates surprise. The good fortune is his inexpressible mercy, Krishna's mercy on them. They get so much mercy from Krishna. They have so much devotion for Krishna. And they get so much mercy from Krishna because of their devotion from Krishna. That is their great fortune. What is their great fortune? That they have so much love for Krishna and that pulls Krishna's mercy to them. The repetition of the word Aho Bhagyam is because of being overtaken repeatedly with surprise because of the uniqueness of their excellence. Of who? That is answered. Of any and all of the residents of the cow pastures of Nanda Gopa, even down to the animals and the birds. Every living entity there is so fortunate. This is wonderful. This is the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam. And Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. But one has to go through the 9 cantos to understand why is Brahma glorifying these cows and birds? Why are they so fortunate? The birds and the animals and the deers and the cows and the cowherd men and Nanda Maharaj, they're so fortunate because one has to first understand who Krishna is to understand their fortune. That he's not just a cowherd boy, that he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and one has to understand conceptually who God is and how powerful he is and what is the nature of him, and that he's composed of eternity, bliss, and knowledge. He's unboundedly powerful, fully full of ecstasy. His body is composed of ecstasy. Can we conceive of this? A form that is unlimitedly powerful? A form that is unbounded? We cannot conceive of it. That was the other part of Brahma's prayers, the previous part. Yes, we cannot conceive of this, of your potency. Therefore, let me offer my obeisances only. So after praising the Ragatmika Vatsalya Prem, the deep spontaneous parental affection of the Brijbasis, Brahma glorified those with Ragatmika Sakya Prem, Mitram, the friendship, those who love Krishna as a friend, and all those relishing intimate relationships with the Lord. Krishna is the friend, Mitra, but not a temporary friend. Krishna is the eternal friend of Sridham and others. From this eternal friendship, it is also understood that Sridham and others are also eternal. If I make a statement, this is Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's comment. If I make a statement, he is an excellent Brahmana because his brahminical qualities are excellent, then the person's excellence is also understood. Similarly, in speaking of the eternality of Krishna's friendship, the friends are also understood to be eternal. This must be explained since the word mitra connotes simply an ordinary friend. All the inhabitants of Vrindavan, ruled by Nanda Maharaj, down to the birds and beasts, were fortunate. What then to speak of Nanda himself and his cowherd men? Who can describe the fortune of those who became the friend of Paramanandam Brahma Sanatanam? It is indescribable. Paramananda, the supreme bliss. The gopis themselves say, O Nanda, everyone in Braja has uncontrollable attraction to your son, and he has natural affection for us. What is the cause of this? That will be said in the 26th chapter of this canto, 13th text. The cause is that Krishna is Purna Brahma, the complete absolute truth. Therefore, the inhabitants of Braja give the topmost bliss to Krishna and receive the topmost bliss in return. Witnessing this exchange of love, Lord Brahma repeats the phrase, Aho Bhagyam, twice to indicate his extreme bliss and astonishment, because just observing the pastimes, he's falling into an ocean of bliss. Text 33. Yet, Brahma says, even though the extent of the good fortune of these residents of Vrindavan is inconceivable, we 11 presiding deities of the various senses, headed by Lord Shiva, are also most fortunate, because the senses of these devotees of Vrindavan are the cups through which we repeatedly drink the nectarian intoxicating beverage of the honey of your lotus feet. So the idea is that there is this is actually described in the 9th chapter of the second canto, 10th chapter of the second canto, that when describing the Ashraya Tattva, Mukti, Narodha Mukti Ashraya, the 10th of the topics of the Bhagavatam, the Ashraya, the shelter of everything else, he is the one. Sutta Goswami describes that he, Krishna, is the Ashraya. And that's what the Bhagavatam will describe, the shelter of everything else. And he is the only one who is independent. Everything else is dependent. Everything else and everyone else is dependent upon him. So in the midst of describing the interdependence of everything else, he describes that the individual, His senses, the individual, his body, and the demigods all have an interdependent relationship that allows the individual to perceive things. So the senses get some pleasure, the individual gets pleasure, and the demigods who also interact because of the demigod in charge of the, perhaps it's Mitra that was mentioned, we can see he's in charge of something, if I remember correctly, or the sun, something to do with the sun. Mitra means also the sun. So the Agni is in, the fire is in charge of speech. So there are subtle senses that exist in the subtle bodies of every living entity. And these, the demigods, they're in charge of operating on a subtle level. So because of the subtle senses and the demigods, then the individual who is in the body can enjoy. So there's an interdependence. Without the individual there, the soul there, then there's no body. And the demigods don't work in that body. So he's saying, we're so fortunate, Brahma is saying, being a demigod, myself and the other demigods, is so important because when you perceive, when the residents of Vrindavan are tasting the sweetness of you, of interacting with you, we, the demigods, are indirectly tasting that sweetness. And that indirect taste is so wonderful. So through them, he explains that we are tasting, and this is wonderful. Now here are some comments on this. The first comment we'll read is Sanatana Goswami's, and then Vishnu's. Brahma says, "Oh, who is capable indeed of describing the glory of these devotees? Ourselves, simply by connecting with these devotees, have become successful, as stated by the verse beginning, Isham, that's text 33. Because of their dealing with you, our dealing with them as demigods has made us successful." So how successful are they? The repeated use of the expression, "O Achyuta," implies that the greatness of the glories of your devotees also never fails. The honey coming from your lotus feet, consisting of servitude to the personality of Godhead, intelligence focused upon such, the functioning of decision, consisting of firmly fixing one's determination on such to serve, visions of the Lord form, hearing topics about him, and so on. How does this appear? By his supreme sweetness and so on, it appears as nectar. And we are tasting this, the demigods, Brahma is saying. Or else, the devotees are amrita, devoid of death or liberated. And it becomes for them asava, an excellent intoxicating beverage. That is established by the fact that it makes one forget liberation by its being more enjoyable than liberation. And in this way, because of especially drinking repeatedly such honey, the greater glories of the residents of Vrindavan in comparison to all other devotees is shown in the words beginning, Ekadasa, meaning the 11 demigods. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, "The inhabitants of Braja have also made us the demigods most fortunate." That is the intention of this verse. Brahma prayed, "What to speak of the fortune of the Brijbasis? We have also become fortunate. Who can describe our fortune? The demigods like Shiva and I, who are the 11 deities in charge of the senses, have become most fortunate. Through the senses of the Brijbasis, we have tasted the extremely intoxicating nectar of the sweet sound of Krishna's ankle bells." Therefore, Brahma prays, "We, the 11 presiding deities of the senses, are experiencing Krishna's sweetness through the 11 senses of the inhabitants of Braja." Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, so through this, we're getting an idea of what the idea is. If Brahma, who is the most elevated person in the universe, if he's feeling so insignificant, not only compared to Krishna, but compared to Krishna's dear devotees, the Brijbasis, even the birds, then what is this wonderful transcendental thing going on in Vrindavan? And we're going to hear more and more about this as the 10th canto goes on. This is the 14th chapter. So there's perhaps 30 more chapters describing Krishna's activities in Vrindavan. They are not of this world. The demigods experience the most pleasure. They're the most powerful persons. One needs power to experience pleasure because one needs to control to get pleasure, because otherwise things don't work the way we want. So to get pleasure, one needs to control. And to control, one needs power. So in this material world, the demigods are the most powerful controllers. And yet, Brahma is feeling completely embarrassed when comparing the pleasure that he experiences to that which the Brijbasis are experiencing. Those who are serving Krishna. Not being Krishna, but serving Krishna. And by their devotion, Krishna is so eager to accept their service. So Brahma is saying, the good fortune of the inhabitants of Braja is incomparable. But we, 10 demigods, the Dikpals, are also very fortunate. Why? Then touching his finger to his own senses, Brahma continued, "Hey Krishna, with our senses, with our fortune, it is with our senses we also experience your beauty and sweetness as you leave Braja to herd the calves." Text 34. Tad buddhi bhagyam. More about good fortune. Brahma says, my greatest possible good fortune would be, so they're so fortunate. Now what would be my good fortune? Brahma is saying, and by this we should also get a glimpse of what our good fortune would be. And then when we understand what our good fortune would be, then we should take steps to attain that good fortune. So Brahma says, my greatest good fortune would be to take any birth, whatever, any birth, whatever, in this forest of Gokul, and have my head bathed by the dust falling from the lotus feet of any of its residents. Their entire life and soul is the Supreme Personality of Godhead Mukunda, the dust of whose feet is still being searched for in the Vedic mantras. Purport here. This verse indicates that Lord Brahma desires to take birth even as the smallest blade of grass in Vrindavan, so that the holy residents of the Lord's abode may walk upon his head and bless him with the dust of their feet. Being realistic, Lord Brahma does not aspire to directly achieve the dust of Lord Krishna's feet. Rather, he aspires for the mercy of the Lord's devotees. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakura explains that Brahma is willing to take birth even as a stone in a paved footpath in the Lord's abode. Since Brahma is the creator of the entire universe, we can just imagine the glorious position of the residents of Vrindavan. That is one of the points. We can just imagine how glorious, if this is the desire of the greatest person within this universe, desiring to take his birth anywhere just so he could not even associate with Krishna as do the residents of Vrindavan, but just the residents of Vrindavan take any birth in Vrindavan so the dust of their feet may go upon his head. And here we are, proud. Very embarrassing. The Lord's devotees achieve their exalted position by unalloyed devotion and love. One cannot achieve such spiritual opulence by any puffed up material process of personal improvement. In Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna book, Srila Prabhupada reveals the mind of Brahma as follows. But if I am not so fortunate as to take birth within the forest of Vrindavan, I beg to be allowed to take birth outside the immediate area of Vrindavan, so that when the devotees go out, they will walk over me. Even that would be a great fortune for me. I am just aspiring for a birth in which I will be smeared by the dust of the devotee's feet. Here's the comment of Srila Srila Swami. The same request that was submitted by me in the verse Tarasturme Natasaburi Bhagya, text 30, is again stated by the verse beginning Tadburi Bhagyam. What is that? This is Srila Swami's comment. Here in this world of men, any birth at all, but more specifically, which is in the forest, and even more specifically, which is Gokul. So I want to take birth here in the forest, in Gokul. Ah, what is to be gained by giving up Satyaloka, the topmost planet in the material world, and taking such a birth on earth in a forest known as Gokul? What is to be gained? By the words Api Kitamangri Rajo Visheka is stated, that birth in which there may be a bathing by the dust of the feet of any one of the residents of Gokul. That is what is to be gained. But why is that the residents of Gokul are so fortunate? That is answered by the words beginning Yat. Their entire life is dedicated to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Mukunda. The fact that he is difficult to obtain is stated by the words Adyapi. Searched out by the Shruti, by the Vedic mantras, by the Vedas, means that he is sought after even by the Vedas, but it is implied he is not seen by them. Sanatana Goswami says, with the desire of having devotion similar to that of the residents of the cow pastures of Srinanda, or with the desire of serving their lotus feet, the five things beginning with liberation that are unfavorable to such are thrown out by the five words beginning Iha. Thus, by the word Janma, liberation is denied. By the word Iha, the attainment of heaven and so forth is denied. By the word Kim Api, birth as a Brahmin and so on is denied. By the word Atavyam, birth in a village or city is denied. And by the word Gokule, residence in the forest meant for austerities is also denied. Any birth at all is with the idea of becoming the smallest blade of grass, because in that particular birth, what is achieved? Directly getting bathed by the dust of the lotus feet of the residents of Vrindavan. By the word Abhishek, it means bathing all the limbs of the body, beginning with the head, with that dust. Or it is spoken out of great greed with regard to the success of all his limbs. Or the bathing by even one particle of dust, by which is hinted that the particle of dust of Vrindavan contains all holy places, and it is capable of making one attain all positions. The dust of whose feet is sought by the Shrutis even today, the Vedas even today, even though you have directly incarnated Krishna, but it is implied, even though you are here, they do not reach you. Or it may be objected, you have prayed, Krishna may be saying, you have prayed for any birth in which you touch the dust of the feet of any of the residents of Vrindavan. But why have you not directly asked for the birth of a gopi? Or so on. That is answered in the word beginning Yat Jivatam. The idea is as follows. It is not fitting for me to pray even for the dust of your lotus feet, which are impossible to be achieved even by the Shrutis, which are supremely ancient and which have given all knowledge to persons like me. So where is the question of praying for the birth of one of the opulent gopis who have subjugated your lotus feet because of the excess of their love? And then we'll complete tonight's reading with the words of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Short comment here. I have given up my control of the universe, Brahma says, and the quest for future liberation. But now, how can I get the dust of the feet of the inhabitants of Braja? Thinking thus, Brahma speaks with certainty. Very wonderful. Okay, thank you. Any questions, comments? Yes.
When Krishna appears, all the legends of Vrindavan appear to others.
Well, there's different classes, but certainly they're all pure devotees, but there's still different classes. There are those, there are the Nityasiddha devotees, there are the demigods who come, and then there are the Sadhana Siddhas, those who have, who aren't descending from the spiritual world, but are going up to the spiritual world. And they perform sadhana practices, spiritual practices in the material world, and they have achieved such love for Krishna that they take their birth in Vrindavan, but on the planet within the material world, and that way, where Krishna takes his birth, and that way they get the association of the eternal associates of Krishna, and they make, you could say, further training, and they make further advancement on a very, very subtle levels by associating with them.
Some of the demigods return to the position of demigods.
Yeah, it appears.
When Arnold says that his position is inferior to the residents of Vrindavan.
Yeah.
But he's the chief demigod, that's also a service to the Supreme Personality of God.
But his love isn't on that level. He's filled with complete awe and reverence. Well, it's probably spiritually complicated, or more than I can understand. No, but this is the fact, because he can't associate with Krishna intimately. He can't associate with Krishna intimately from that position. Well, they must be obviously very special demigods. Or a part of, I'm not sure exactly. Dr. Trini, do you know the answer to that?
There are demigods in the spiritual world.
No.
What was the question?
The question is, Brahma is a demigod, and some demigods take birth in Krishna Leela. Maybe that's in the Yadu dynasty.
Oh.
So how... there's the categories of the residents of Vrindavan. So, yeah, it's not every demigod, and it's not they have a taste for something. That's the only thing that can. But Lakshmi couldn't enter. Lakshmi Devi, because she didn't want to give up her opulent position and take birth in this simple cowherd village.
And to give up the sense of being a demigod.
That's part of it. That's for Lakshmi, for sure. That's the best I can do with that at this point. Yes. Yes.
Lastly, the demigods is not only just demigods in the show. World planets and demigods. The demigods of the spiritual planet are different.
Yes.
So, when you come to this kind of question, so which demigods are you talking about? Demigods from the show universe, and they take part in the Gokula?
Demigods in the
show. Yes. Demigods.
It's like more like the Sadhana Siddha devotees, that they're getting a chance. Yes. That was the indication of Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur. Yes.
Brahma doesn't know that Krishna is really.
Now he does. He didn't before.
I was just thinking. So, in that case, if all the demigods does not know Krishna is supreme, is it correct to say that every demigod actually doesn't
they can forget, like Indra knows that Krishna is supreme even, but he forgets sometimes, because when one is in a position of power, one tends to let that position go to one's head, so to speak, and one thinks no one is more powerful than me. That's one point. One can get proud. A second point is they may accept that Vishnu or Narayan is supreme, but there is little Krishna wandering around the pasturing ground with a peacock feather on his head and covered with the minerals of Braja and a flute. So Brahma could not accept that this person, little boy, is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He couldn't accept it. He knew he was, but is this really? He doubted. How is it possible that this little boy to be all powerful? So Krishna showed him, gave him a hint. So those two reasons. The one reason is opulence tends to make one proud, and pride makes one forget one's insignificance. And the second reason is that Krishna displays here his intimate pastimes. Just like if who is the most powerful person in the world right now? Just a guess. Just say someone. Who? Okay. President of the United States. So if you walked into his house one day and you saw him just wrestling with his little grandchildren, you know, and then you'd think, wait a second, is this the most powerful person? Because you're seeing him in the intimate part of his house. So similarly, for that reason, the demigod seeing Krishna in the most intimate pastimes, dealing with his most dearest intimate devotees, they sometimes forget who he is. Did you have a question? Okay. Yes.
The demigods, they have the conception of Radha Krishna, Lakshmi Narayan, like we have Narayan,
they tend to think Narayan, because their worshipable object is Lord Narayan, tending to. They tend to see Lord Narayan as supreme. They can think like that, but Brahma doesn't think like that.
Not anymore.
Right, but also he had a special experience of Krishna too. When from the lotus, because Gopal Tapati Upanishad explains that Krishna actually appeared to him in his Shyamasunda form. Yeah. It also explains. And also, yeah, and therefore,
he saw the whole.
Yes, but it's very rare. This, so being a demigod is not a qualification to understanding Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It's easier to go to Vaikuntha from that position. Yes, to understand Krishna is very difficult. One needs the touch of Mahaprabhu's mercy.
You were talking about Brahma describing those fortunate devotees, and you were saying that sometimes we do not appreciate devotional service and we take it for granted.
Yeah.
So, also you mentioned about faith.
Lack of faith.
Lack of faith.
Lack of realization, too.
Well, it's the product of that faith is created by association.
Yes.
Because even sometimes after hearing about God, unfortunate people do not believe in him. So what does that mean, that one has to keep hearing more, associating more?
Certainly.
Fortune?
That will certainly, and serving. If someone doesn't have a background of piety, of bhakti, sukriti, then by hearing and hearing of sometimes they'll get something, and then they want to do some service, then they get something. So if they continue putting spiritual deposits into their consciousness, then gradually they'll eventually end up in the spiritual world. So for a person who has a little bit of piety, he should continue. And a person who has more experience, naturally he's eager to hear. So he gets faith, but he has a taste, that's the thing. He has a taste. So hearing comes out as very important, extremely important. But maybe I didn't exactly answer your question. Yes, faith is created by hearing in the association of devotees. Association, basically.
So it's
associate with the sincere and we become more sincere.
So if somebody's hearing and still doesn't agree on the devotion service, so that hearing has to be improved?
Well, it has to be. Who's going to say it has to be improved? We say it all the time and it doesn't happen. So people have to realize themselves, really. It's very much between them and Krishna. Our duty is to say, hearing is so important, worshipping is so important, serving Krishna is so important. But what people do with it is their business. It's between them and Krishna. We can't force someone to take the Krishna consciousness seriously. Indeed, it's hard enough to even force oneself to be serious, or to speak of somebody else. So we leave that up to Krishna and them. Ultimately, we have to. So what is the cause of someone getting something but not wanting more? It's just some immaturity. But everyone is in that situation. So we look at someone who, say we come to the temple and follow more strictly, say. Then we look at someone who comes very, very irregularly and doesn't chant his rounds, and we say, oh, they are less fortunate. But someone who's more mature than us is looking at us in the same way. And someone, so when one's mission is done, when one has prema bhakti, one has full love for Krishna, then one is, he's really fortunate, he's there. So everyone else is striving. So we try to help each other as best we can. So some people need help by saying, you should come. And some other people need help in a different way. Come, just want you to do some work, some service or something like that. Some people need help by, you know, it's just different ways. So someone who, like Prabhupada, was very expert in inspiring people. Very, very incredibly expert at inspiring, empowered by Krishna to inspire people to give up everything and serve Krishna. Well, we don't seem to have so much power to do that. So we try in our little way. Whatever we have, we try. But ultimately it's up to Krishna, sort of how it seems to me. Does that get to the point that you're asking about? Srimad Bhagavatam Kanta Tan Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Sri Vaishnava Charitas Ki Jai, Lord Brahma Ki Jai, Gaur Bhaktivinoda Ki Jai.